It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, presented by the FTN Network, FTN Fantasy. My name is Adam Pfeiffer. Not joined by Derek Brown today. Derek is feeling a little under the weather. Hopefully he has a bounce back with his whatever he's dealing with. I think he's just got like a, you know, just a little cold or something. Nothing too serious. So hopefully Derek gets better and has a good weekend. But I am thrilled to be joined by not just one of my favorite people in the fantasy industry, one of my favorite people just in general, to talk about some bounce back candidates for the 2020 season. It is Dave Richard from CBSSports.com. You can follow him, should be already following, but at Dave Richard if you're not. Dave, been a little bit since we've spoke. Glad to have you back on, I guess, a different podcast this time. But we talked before we got on, it's officially August, and that tends to be the busiest time of the year. So how are things with you right now?
Things are good. Things are really, really busy. We're getting ready for the NFL season as if there isn't a global pandemic gripping every human being right now. We are anticipating the NFL season going off come hell or high water, much like the Major League Baseball season has gone. And hopefully, you know, I think it's a good sign that only 69 players opted out. I think it's a good sign that there weren't a slew of players who went on the reserve COVID list. And the highest profile name who did go on the reserve COVID list had a false positive test. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, Matthew Stafford got a couple extra days before he had to actually get back to work. And this is a weird feeling. I kind of miss the preseason. I wish we had preseason games. One of the things I do every year is watch every preseason game, try and get an idea of which guys, be it in this year or future years, could end up being something in the NFL. And we're not going to be privy to that. It's making this year a lot different than previous year. Listen, this year has been different than every other year that we've all experienced in our lives. And as it turns out, football is no exception. And it's going to be really interesting to see how this is almost going to be the test for whether or not preseason football should alter fantasy rankings. Like, you're going to move players up and down when they get hurt or benched or whatever. But I mean, when you hear about a player who's doing Curtis Samuel last year, everybody was going crazy for Curtis Samuel. And people were taking him as soon as round 7, and he ended up being terrible. And I just wonder if there were no preseason games and we couldn't see Curtis Samuel out there, would we have really moved him up that high?
What about Amir Abdullah from a couple years ago?
Oh, man. And not that I was ever like the biggest Amir Abdullah fan, but yeah, these guys will have huge preseason games, and then regular season comes, the lights come on, and they shrink. I mean, that was James Washington's story until the last season. Mm-hmm. So, and there have been countless other receivers who've been like that, and running backs too. So it's going to be interesting. At the same time, and Adam, you'll know this, there are players like Ronald Jones who get drafted with high expectations, and then you watch them play in the preseason, and you go, oh my God, has this guy ever played football before? This is ridiculous. And then that talks you out of drafting him. Like, before there was preseason football, Ronald Jones as a rookie was going, I want to say, like round 7 or round 8. And then you watch him in the preseason, and he's a deer in the headlights. And, I mean, I don't think he was even getting drafted by the time we got to that September. So it's interesting. It's definitely kind of – it's going to be unique to see just how the lack of preseason games doesn't shape our rankings.
Yeah, and it's also going to be really interesting week 1 in particular to see if there's any rust with a lot of these guys. Not just, I mean, you know, your veteran quarterbacks and running backs will probably be fine, but like, you know, second, third year, fourth year players, they might still have some rust to shake off, and we know the rookies could get off to a slow start. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting, because I don't know about you, but for preseason for me, it's like I'm so excited about it the first 2 weeks, and then it's like, oh, there's still two more weeks of preseason left.
God,
and it's
yes.
Like, now I would be thrilled to watch preseason games. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see, because if there's, you know, if these guys are perfectly fine without the preseason, maybe it doesn't even come back. We'll have to see. But
right. Remember, there's no preseason in college football.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, and a lot of the best teams in college football, they do not come out very rusty at all.
Exactly.
So we'll see. And all these players have gone through that. You know, there isn't a single person in the NFL that didn't play football in college first. So,
yep.
And a lot of the coaches are certainly familiar with it. So I don't know if there's going to be a serious rusty period. Some teams there will be. You know, I think about the poor Denver Broncos, who are going to have to go through how many padded practices are they going to end up having? Maybe a dozen. All these teams are going to have, and then the lights are going to come on. It's Monday Night Football. It's Week One, and those poor defensive players are going to have to tackle Derrick Henry. And they, you know, how many live tackling drills have they really done? I don't know. Probably not that many. And I bet there's rust there. I bet Derrick Henry ends up having a really good Week One.
I think I'm not quite ready to start my kind of, I know the DFS sites are releasing salaries for the Week One slates, but I'm not quite there in terms of breaking down the games. But that might be a contributing factor in some Week One rankings and matchups. Just, you know, that's kind of a good example. Like, if the Broncos players have not been doing many drills in terms of tackling and stuff during this shortened training camp, like, that, could you find a worse running back to have to go up against in Week One? Like,
yeah, that would be interesting. Bad.
Yeah. But on today's show, we are going to go through some bounce back candidates. There are a handful of guys that now, like, bounce back can be. We're going to talk about some guys that were mostly injured last year, but there is also some guys that just didn't perform well and could be in a different situation or a better situation to where they could, you know, get back to where they should be or even higher. So let's start with the quarterback position. I have a guy that obviously stands out, but there could be others. Dave, who do you see as a potential bounce back candidate at the quarterback position this year?
Let's start with Big Ben in Pittsburgh, and the fact that he's not going as a top 12 quarterback, I think, is understandable. Not only did he, you know, not play much last year, and when he did play, he looked pretty terrible. When's the last time he was really good for fantasy without Antonio Brown on his team? So I get the skepticism for it, but he basically had a year off of throwing a football, and there were all these, you know, images of him with this giant beard, and he looked pretty chunky. He looked like a dude who looked more like the West Virginia University mascot than he did an NFL quarterback. But he's taken off the weight, he's taken a shave, and every single report about his arm is glowing. And there's people who I would trust with their football evaluations who believe that he'll be a stronger thrower now that he's had the year off and he's had the surgery to help his elbow out. And maybe this bought him a couple more years. And the Steelers, they don't have Antonio Brown anymore, but they've got a lot of weapons in that passing game that's going to cause problems for defenses. They added Eric Ebron. Not that he's going to be the best one, but definitely a red zone threat for Indianapolis. Hopefully he doesn't make many mistakes for the Steelers, but somebody who can come down in the end zone with a bunch of touchdowns. And Roethlisberger definitely likes throwing to those big targets. Another big target they drafted, Chase Claypool. They probably don't have to rush him. They probably don't have to put too much on his plate. They can just say, all right, you're just going to be our rebounder. And when we get inside the 10, you're going to line up against a cornerback that's 6 inches shorter than you. Just go up and get the ball before he does. That's all you got to do, kid. That will help Roethlisberger. And then Deontay Johnson is a very, very popular breakout pick. There were times when I was watching his film coming out of college that he reminded me of Antonio Brown because he's so shifty and he does a great job of ditching defenders, making quick moves, getting into open space. He's really someone that I'm intrigued by and I'm trying to get in a lot of my drafts. And then, of course, there's that John Smith guy. Oh, I'm sorry. His name is Juju Smith-Schuster. And he... I don't know if he's going to be a target hog like he was a couple of years back. I think he'll be good. I don't think he'll be amazing. I see people ranking him as a top 10 wide receiver. I think that's giving him a little bit too much credit, but I still see him helping Roethlisberger put together a big year. And I didn't even mention James Washington, who ended up doing some nice things last year. Vance McDonald is still on the team. The running backs contribute to the passing game, and the offensive line is pretty good. So Roethlisberger is one of those quarterbacks. I never have a specific quarterback draft strategy in fantasy, but one of the things that I don't mind doing, and really it's all about value at quarterback and tight end this year. I want to be able to feel like I'm stealing a quarterback from the rest of my league when I take one. If I see a quarterback on the board when it's my pick and I feel like I'm ripping off the other managers in my league, that's when I know it's the right time to take a quarterback. And if it just comes to pass that there's a big quarterback run that I miss out on and, you know, I'm the last team to need a quarterback, getting Big Ben on my team to start the year when he's taking on the Giants and has a bunch of other favorable schedules, or has a favorable schedule, has a bunch of favorable games on the schedule, I'm interested. I like him. I think he does bounce back this year. Probably my favorite bounce back quarterback, period.
Yeah, I've been really warming up to him. We talked about the Steelers stack as a whole on yesterday's podcast, and like Pittsburgh was really pass heavy in neutral game scripts last year, and I know their defense is really good. You could probably make the case it's top three in the NFL, but yep. Their defense is, you know, we had the steel curtain for a while, and they were still throwing the ball a good bit, and you know, a couple of years back when he was throwing the ball as much as anybody, they still had an average to slightly above average defense. So I think it's just kind of in Big Ben and Mike Tomlin's kind of DNA to rely on Roethlisberger. So I'm really warming up to him. The post-hype sleeper is probably Baker Mayfield. I if he doesn't bounce back this year, I don't know if it's going to happen for him. Like Odell Beckham apparently wasn't fully healthy last year. We'll see what's going on with Jarvis Landry. But still, I mean, the last 2 years, the help that they've given Baker Mayfield is unbelievable. You add Beckham, you add Landry, you add Nick Chubb, you add Kareem Hunt. Now you add Austin Hooper and Jack Conklin and Jedrick Wills in the offensive line. Hooper and Njoku are really big for me because they got nothing out of their tight ends last year because Njoku got hurt. I think that was that week 2 Monday night game against the Jets where he landed awkwardly on his head and they just couldn't get it. Like they had Ricky Seals-Jones for a bit at tight end. Like they just they didn't have anything. So whether it's Njoku or both of them, because we know Stefanski likes to use two tight ends, that's going to be huge. We all, I think, would agree that Odell Beckham is far better, and he could be another player we'll talk about later, far better than what he showed last year. I just think this offense, especially with Freddie Kitchens, who would just refuse to relinquish play calling duties, has to take a step forward. And, you know, are they going to be, you know, the pass heaviest team with Stefanski and Nick Chubb there? No, but I think efficiency wise, their offense should be much better. And I'll tell you what, inside the 10-yard line, it's kind of like an embarrassment of riches for Baker Mayfield. So I would prefer Ben Roethlisberger, but I mean, you have to expect Baker to bounce back. And another guy that if you are in two quarterback leagues, or if you just really, really want to wait, I don't think he has the upside of Roethlisberger, but I think he's, definitely going to be better than he was last year.
Baker has 49 career touchdowns. Guess how many of them have gone to tight ends?
20.
17.
Okay.
Close enough. But that's 35%. That's more than a third of the touchdowns he's thrown in the NFL. That's a tendency, if you ask me. And I remember in college, Mark Andrews was his guy. So I think Austin Hooper's there to catch touchdowns. So that's not good for Odell Beckham. And I'm concerned about the volume being there for Baker because when they're inside the 10, it's an embarrassment of riches. But a lot of those riches are in the backfield and on the offensive line. And they can use play action all day long. They're going to be able to do that right from week one. But I think that they're going to try and run the ball in a lot too. So this is a team that I think is going to skew conservative offensively, probably do a lot of the same things schematically that the Vikings did. It's going to be a West Coast offense. And that means that Odell could be a little bit more of a deep shot receiver rather than an alpha male playmaker. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, and it could be a week-to-week thing based on the matchups. But so long as Landry's not on the field, it's going to be easy for defenses to say, all right, Baker, beat us without Odell. We're going to double-team him and really shift coverage his way. And it'll be easier for Baker to do better this year than last year. But I don't know if the door's open for him to average 275 yards a game, multiple touchdowns per game, and not turn the ball over. I think he'll be good. When you said he's a great target in two quarterback leagues, I agree with you. He's a good target in super flex leagues. But if I'm in a one quarterback league, like the majority of people play in, Baker's not really going to be someone that's high on my list. I'm way more into Daniel Jones.
Same here.
Yeah, I think Daniel Jones could be this year's version, not to say he's going to be the number one quarterback, but this year's version of Lamar Jackson 2019, Patrick Mahomes 2018, Dak Prescott on his rookie year, and the year after that.
Just in regards to the guy you get super late that has, top five potential.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm fully on board. I like Daniel Jones a lot. And I mean, just the guy was pretty much thrown into a difficult situation because he just never had his full weaponry. He never had a game where it was Slayton, Barkley, Ingram, Tate, and Shepard all healthy. So, yeah, and we know he's going to run with the football. I'm in on Daniel Jones, too. Let's go to the running back position. I want to get your take on somebody that I don't know if it's concerning that I'm this high on him, but people are going to be off him a little bit because he left a little bit of a bad taste in their mouth. But David Montgomery, he's going to get 250 carries, right? I mean, Tariq Cohen's never reached 100 carries in a season. They're, you know, barring some craziness, he's not going to get there this year. He was eighth in the NFL in goal line carries last year, and only Leonard Fournette had a higher percentage of teams' carries from inside the 5 yard line, an 87.5%. Now, the Bears are, you know, the problem was the Bears were an incredibly poor offense. They were 29th in yards per drive, 30th in three and outs per drive. They just, you know, they didn't have a lot of scoring opportunities. But regardless of if it's Trubisky under center or Nick Foles, like if Foles is under center, they're definitely going to be better. If Trubisky's under center, I don't see how they get worse. But also, I just think you're getting 250 carries from a guy that you can get. I've gotten Dave Montgomery often in like the sixth round. So what do you think of him? Could he have a, you know, a lot of people, if I'm not mistaken, he climbed to like the third round in drafts towards the end of the summer last year. So now you're getting him three rounds later, and his role hasn't changed, in my opinion.
It hasn't changed, but I'm worried that it could get reduced if he doesn't become more efficient
like
of a
if
running
if he gets
back.
Off slow.
Yeah, I mean, he had 2.3 yards after contact per attempt. That was 27th out of 28 running backs.
And yeah, that was shocking because he was known for breaking tackles out of college.
He couldn't do it. And I think what he is, and this isn't a compliment, he's a gets-what's-blocked running back. Mm-hmm. So that offensive line has to make room for him, or the offense has to scheme him open. I don't think he can create in the pros like he could in college, because you watch him in college, and you're right. Dude was an animal. And now, at least last year, I think he needed a lot of help to have a lot of big plays. An example of a guy who had a great preseason, and then in the regular season, he left a bad taste in your mouth. And it's hard to say that he's a bounce-back guy when he had almost 1,100 total yards and 7 total touchdowns last year.
Right.
But I think that's closer to a ceiling. I could very easily see the Bears coaching staff feeling the heat of, well, you had a bad year last year after the double doink in the playoffs the year before. The GM has made some really bad calls. There could be some pressure on this team to win. And if he's not helping them win, they've got a running back. I know that he's getting about half the snaps each year. And you're right, Tariq Cohen's not getting the carry workload. But, man, he's way more elusive and way more of a playmaker than David Montgomery is. And I could see them reducing Montgomery's workload a little bit. They did it a little bit last year when he wasn't running great. But they also, there were times last year when they didn't care that he wasn't doing well. They were putting him in, and at the very least, he was eating up 30 seconds of game clock at the time. I don't want to get all caught up in Montgomery. You're drafting him late. I think that's the right way to do it. I don't think there's going to be anybody in fantasy drafts that's going to be excited to get David Montgomery. I think he's best suited as a borderline number two fantasy running back. The touches might be there. I'm not sure they're definitely going to be there, because the offensive line, not the same. And if Montgomery can't produce, the Bears are going to have to go to a plan B. And plan B will involve Montgomery getting a lot less work. That makes me nervous.
Fair enough. And like you said, they could maybe just not give Tariq Cohen the carries, but use him in the passing game as kind of an extension of the running game if Montgomery's not, you know,
sure.
Not
and it's
playing better.
It's also a team that needs to get back to its creative roots in the red zone. I think they tried to do some creative things last year, but I think
Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah. I mean, there was definitely some wacky stuff. It worked for them 2 years ago. It didn't work out so well last year. The more creative they get in the red zone, the worse that is for Montgomery, since it's hard to be creative with a bowling ball like that.
Who do you think could be another breakout candidate at running back? I mean, we had a couple of these veterans, David Johnson, perhaps. I know Derek is a big David Johnson guy this year. Who stands out to you in the backfields?
Yeah, David Johnson won't be one of those guys for me. 28-year-old that's going to end up splitting reps on a team that has historically not thrown passes to their running backs. I'm taking a pass on David Johnson. I think people are worried about James Conner and whether or not he can bounce back. I think everything's there for him to be a great bounce back candidate. And I've started to rank him closer to a round two player, but you almost never have to draft him in round two because when you're up in round two, there's someone else that's there that you'll take, and Connor's there in round three. But the Steelers really didn't address that running back position, and every single indication from the GM down has been this is Connor's opportunity. This is his chance to go out there and earn a new contract and be that guy for the city of Pittsburgh. You know, he grew up in Pittsburgh, went to college at Pitt. It's an amazing story. And he was on pace last year for over 1,400 total yards and 14 touchdowns, which is insane because before he got hurt, he really wasn't doing all that great. He was kind of a touchdown-based running back, but he would have still gotten there on that pace, and then he got hurt. And, yeah, he got hurt the year before. But I see the Steelers' offense being a lot better now with Roethlisberger there, and I could see James Conner. It looks like he's bulked up just a little bit more. Could be somebody that vaults back into the top 12 at running back. And the fact that there isn't a lot of competition for him, I don't think Benny Snell is going to come in and take work away from him. I actually love the Anthony McFarland pick. Ben Gretsch, who's one of the analysts at CBS Sports, he and I were batting around McFarland in the lead up to the draft and where would be a good spot for him. And I came up with Pittsburgh. And sure enough, the Steelers took him. He's a really good fit there. Change of pace guy. And even I don't think he'll take that much work away from Connor, provided that Connor stays on the field. So when it's round three and I'm trying to load up on running backs because every other position is so deep, Connor's one I'm veering toward. I'm excited about his upside, and I'm willing to take a chance on him again in round three to try and bank on it. And the Steelers' schedule, we mentioned it, week one against the Giants, that's just the beginning. Their schedule's pretty good to begin the year. I mean, eventually they play Baltimore.
Bengals twice, they're a bad run defense.
Yeah, well, they were last year. I imagine that they'll be a little bit better this year, but not so much better.
Yeah.
The Ravens game is week 7, and then again in week 8, 9, 10, 11, 12? 12. So I'm good with that, and I think a lot of the other games – here's the Steelers' schedule to begin the year. This might sell everybody on Roethlisberger and Connor and Juju. This might be the cherry on top. At the Giants, Denver – Houston, those two games are at home, at Tennessee, Philadelphia at home, Cleveland at home. Those are the first six games, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's at least a 4-2 start for the Steelers there. And if they're winning, that means Connor should be rolling, and it means Roethlisberger should be putting up good numbers too.
Yeah, and I was fully prepared before the draft and everything to be completely off James Conner, and that we saw some reports that they might take a back early, like they could have taken, you know, a Dobbins or somebody, and then they didn't. And, you know, Anthony McFarland, I like him too, but he's not, you know, he's not a Jonathan Taylor or Dobbins where you just, you know, can give him all the work when the time comes. So I think that helped James Conner for sure. And I guess the Steelers are just the obvious bounce back team of the year when you go from when you lose Big Ben in week two and have, you know, Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges throwing passes. Just, you know, that's just how this team's going to operate. We know they have enough talent, and we know Big Ben, when healthy, is still a more than serviceable quarterback. So, yeah, like, the other running backs, you can make, like, Le'Veon Bell, but I just, Adam Gase's offense, Le'Veon Bell should be, like, he got nothing in terms of yards created before contact because the Jets' offensive line was so bad. McGovern should help. And why am I blanking on who they added?
They drafted Mekhi Becton.
Thank you, Mekhi Becton. They should help, but also you have the fact that Le'Veon Bell, maybe it's because the line was bad, but he had no explosive runs last year. You know, the thing you can hold your hat on Le'Veon Bell is he's going to catch probably 60 passes if he stays healthy, which definitely helps, but he will never get back to being the Pittsburgh Le'Veon Bell. So if you're expecting anything close to that, you'll probably be mistaken.
Not with the Jets.
Yeah, let me rephrase. Definitely not with the Jets, but that's the other thing. Like, Adam Gase clearly isn't huge on Le'Veon Bell, so who's to say Le'Veon Bell doesn't lose touches to Frank Gore?
I mean, that's what I was about to bring up, is that for whatever reason, I don't know, you know, does Frank Gore bring donuts to the coach every day? I don't know. But he's averaged right a little more than 10 carries per game each of the past couple of years, including the year he was in Miami with Adam Gase.
When Kenyon Drake was getting no work.
Yeah, and remember, everybody gets so annoyed by Frank Gore because no one uses him in fantasy. Everyone wants to see the other guy in that backfield thrive. And coaches, here's really what it is, Adam. Coaches love Frank Gore because he knows his assignments. He's a true pro. He's willing to take young guys under his wing. That would be a little weird. under his wing might be weirder because he's not a bird. I think that Frank Gore, he's a guy that coaches like to reward with carries. And Le'Veon averaged 20.7 touches per game last year. That seems like a lot. That's a career low for him.
Yeah,
and it could go lower.
He was like, yeah.
So I would love, and I appreciate that the Jets are trying to get that offensive line better. I don't think it's going to be that much better. Like, it went from puke on your shoes bad to puke in your mouth bad. Like, at least you don't have to clean anything, but you're still tasting it.
Yeah.
So I'm not feeling Le'Veon Bell until he gets traded to a contender. Or if a running back gets hurt and the Jets are out of it, and they're going to be out of it because their defense is the worst in the league, and Le'Veon ends up going to a contending team. But I can't draft him saying, well, I'm just going to sit here and wait for Le'Veon Bell to get traded, and then you're all going to be sorry. Can't do that. I don't think that's going to be the case. But in PPR, 4 or 5 catches per game, I think that's fair. That gives you a good floor because he could probably get you, 70 or 80 yards on top of that most weeks. And maybe once in a while he'll be so kind to find the end zone.
That's the other thing. Adam Gase's, we've talked about this in the podcast a couple weeks ago. Adam Gase's offense just have not produced rushing touchdowns either.
Nope.
So, yeah. Let's go to wide receiver and let's just get it out of the way, Dave. Just stick with the Pittsburgh theme. I mean, I know from listening to you on the CBS podcast, you're not as, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, you're not as high on Juju as the consensus. I also don't have him as a top 10 guy, but we'd be mistaken to say he's not going to bounce back, right? I mean, he has to by default unless he gets hurt again.
He averaged under 6 targets per game last year. He's going to do better than that. I just don't think he's going to be at the point where he's at 10 targets per game.
Yeah, you don't project him as like a 150 target guy, like maybe like 120.
Yeah, probably right around 120, which is about 8 per game. That's fine. I think he can get there, and I think he can do good with that. But I think he's a volume receiver. I don't see him as a playmaker in the same vein as other wide receivers that you would consider a top 12 guy. I don't think he's quite there, and I don't know if he ever will be quite there. He does make 2 or 3 spectacular plays per year. And everything else is, anywhere between 5 and 15 yards, and he just needs a lot of volume to get that done. And is he going to be the guy that defenses try and take away? Like we talked about with Odell, Odell's going to easily be the guy that defenses try and take away in Cleveland. Is Juju going to be that guy? Or are defenses even going to say, Juju isn't all that. We don't have to put 2 guys on him. We can put a safety over the top, and we just have to make sure we tackle him. But I don't think teams look at Juju. Maybe in the red zone they'll do it, but I don't think they fear Smith-Schuster like they do other number one receivers. So it just comes down to how often Roethlisberger is going to lean on him. It's a lot easier to lean on Smith-Schuster when somebody else on the Steelers is definitely drawing a double team. And that's what the case was with Antonio Brown in those first 2 years for Juju. And now that Juju's on his own, and I don't know if he's going to be able to step through and be a top 12 wide receiver. I might put it at like 40%. There's just too many questions about his volume and then what happens in the red zone.
That's what I'm worried about with Juju. That's probably the only concern
I'm telling
I have.
You, like everybody, we like to make fun of Eric Ebron and, Ebron coming out on Twitter saying he plays fantasy football and he's taking himself first and all that stuff. Yeah, it's great. Ebron's a chill guy, but he can catch touchdowns now, and he's just a big, giant dude. You wouldn't talk trash about Eric Ebron if he was standing in front of you.
If Eric Ebron had 10 touchdowns this year, I don't think anybody should be shocked because he's done it. What do you have, 14? 10. I mean, he had 14 a couple years ago. If he has 10, Big Ben's having a huge year, I guess.
Sure. I think if he has 7, no one should be shocked.
Right.
But I don't think you should draft him. Yeah, Ebron's someone you might want to stream because he's playing the Giants in Week 1. And their secondary is starting to look like a real problem. And Ebron could easily be a guy that comes up. He's touchdown dependent.
Yep.
That's pretty much what he was in Indianapolis. It's just like, who's scoring touchdowns every week? And people bought in, and he came through for them 2 years ago.
He, like, ran for a touchdown that year. It was, right. was but, crazy.
But, but if he scores seven times, that's touchdowns away from Smith-Schuster. And you could say, fine. You know, Antonio Brown would have taken away a lot of touchdowns if he was still there. Well, there's just more mouths to feed, and there's still a run game. So I don't see it quite being as prolific for Juju as it's been in the past.
Yeah, the Steelers probably won't be as concentrated as an offense as they've been over the last 4 or 5 years. I think we can definitely agree on that. The reason I don't have Juju as a top 10 guy is because I have other guys ahead of him, including Adam Thielen, who I will probably draft as much as possible this year. He's my wide receiver 7. I understand there's some concern because he's, you know, turns 30 this year, and he was hurt last year, but that was really his only injury since he's become, you know, just a fantasy superstar. Stephon Diggs obviously gone. Diggs didn't have, like, a huge target share, but it's still nearly 100 targets gone. And Minnesota's defense is quietly taking some hits. Their secondary was already struggling last year, and they lose some corners. They lose Xavier Rhodes, say what you want. But their free agent acquisition, Michael Pierce.
Oh, that's huge.
He opts out. That's massive for them. I could see their defense taking a step back, and if it does, just a little bit, that'll be enough to where Minnesota's not, you know, the run-heavy team we saw last year. That'll still be their identity at first, but, you know, what if... And my co-host Derek Brown has talked about when they were in negative game scripts, they... Not even talking down like 14 points. When they were just slightly behind, they went to the pass. And I think Adam Thielen has a 150 target ceiling this year. He's still really good at football. And again, you want to talk about a concentrated offense. If they do pass more, it's Thielen, it's Dalvin Cook out of the backfield, maybe Jefferson, and maybe the tight end. It's very concentrated.
He's probably my favorite bounce back receiver of anybody that we will talk about. But there is a connection between him and the running backs. Last two seasons, 32 games, 20 of those 32 games, a running back had 15 or more PPR points for the Vikings. Thielen had 15 plus in only 5 of those 20 games. So not a high rate at all when the run game is going. But there were those other 12 games where a Minnesota running back didn't have 15 PPR points. And a lot of the games came when Dalvin Cook wasn't healthy. He had 15 plus in 8 of those 12 games. So he seemed to be very connected to, we can't run the ball? Well, let's throw these short passes to Thielen and occasionally take some deep shots. Now, in a lot of those games, he manned the slot. And it sounds like the Vikings are going to be happy to have Jefferson in the slot. That makes sense for them because you can't really rush Justin Jefferson into a big role. You can't do that with any rookie. You want to acclimate them as easy as possible. Jefferson played a lot in the slot at LSU. He is a slot-ready wide receiver. That pushes Adam Thielen to the outside. And his numbers weren't quite as efficient when he was outside. I'm looking at the last 3 years of Thielen's games. He had about the same amount of targets, 172 in the slot, 171 outside. He had 11 touchdowns in the slot, 8 outside. He had 1,500 yards, almost 1,500 yards from the slot, just over 1,600 yards outside, but 125 catches. That was a nice catch rate from the slot. Versus 109 receptions out of 171 targets, not as high as a catch rate from the outside. But Cousins loves him, and I think volume, we can't quite say it for Juju, but I think we can say it for Thielen, given all the other guys that they have in that offense. And Jefferson will be okay from the slot. Maybe he gets to 60 catches this year, but I don't see him being, you know, the next Adam Thielen. Let's just put it that way. Irv Smith will take some numbers away. Rudolph will be a factor in the red zone. To me, it comes down to Dalvin Cook. And if Cook stays healthy for most weeks, it'll probably end up hurting Thielen. But if Cook can't do it, and, you know, injuries on top of COVID issues, the opportunity is there for Thielen to get back to that 150 target range. Yep. But even if Cook plays, you can't rule out 120, 125 targets for Thielen. So I think volume will be in his favor. It's just a matter of whether or not he can come through on that volume as an outside guy, because it looks like he's going to line up there more often than
I think he's still perfectly fine outside. He was like 40% in the slot last year, and like they would use him like 60-40 outside inside. He can And I don't think I think he's still going to play inside a good bit. It's just Justin Jefferson is primarily, if you were to ask me, going to play inside. But yeah, if I do a draft and I go running back my first two picks and I get Thielen in the third round, I'll do it every time. I've done it multiple times already.
Sure. Easier to do in PPR than not.
Yeah. Who are some other receivers? Like A.J. Green, obviously, you can make the case. He didn't play all of last year, so if he has one catch for 1 yard, he'll bounce back. I really, really am interested in Brandon Cooks. I might be alone in that, but I just think... So I think Deshaun Watson is going to have a monster year this year, just out of necessity. But Brandon Cooks, like, I don't know what happened exactly last year with the Rams, but you know, prior to that season, he has been a very good like wide receiver too in fantasy pretty much every year. And I know he's played in some great offenses with some great quarterbacks, but this is a great quarterback. We'll see how great the offense is. But I looked at some of the numbers for him since 2015 from when he's playing indoors and outdoors. Obviously, he spent a lot of his career with the Saints indoors, and that offense was fantastic, and so was Drew Brees. But, I mean, Deshaun Watson, you can make the case he's, what, the third or fourth best quarterback in the NFL? Like, he's very good. And I just think he is going super late to where you could get a wide receiver two at a very cheap wide receiver three price tag. So his numbers since 2015 indoors, he's averaging over 10 receiving yards more per game. He's averaging nearly a receiving touchdown, or nearly half a receiving touchdown per game, 75 receiving yards, almost five catches, like 16. This is DFS specific, so it's 16 DraftKings points per game, which is PPR, but I think he is going really overlooked, and I think he could really bounce back this year. Thoughts on him? And I also want your thoughts on T.Y. Hilton as well. I have him written down as well.
Yeah, and they're both good bounce-back candidates. And you nailed it with Cooks. Like, if he had never had that bad year last year, I'm sure he'd be getting drafted in round five at the absolute latest, because somehow, some way, he ends up with numbers at the end of the year to finish as a productive fantasy wide receiver. The biggest note I have on Cooks is that inconsistency is his consistency. All right. And you know this, right? Because all these years, 15, 16, 17, 18, when he's putting up numbers, he was never better than 50% in consistency, looking for 15 or more in PPR or 9 points in non-PPR. And his best year for that was 2018. It was half the year. 8 of 16 games he came through. So it's going to be, wow, 1 week Brandon Cook's awesome, and then the next week he's, you know, 3 for 35, and you want to set yourself on fire for ever drafting him in the first place. But now you've got to throw the concussion issue on top of it, and I really think the Rams were spooked by the second concussion, and they didn't really want to put Cooks in a position where he would get hurt, so they limited his playing time last year. And Houston's taking a big risk with him, but they had to do something to try and improve their receiving core because they just traded away DeAndre Hopkins. So they traded a receiver that they didn't want to overpay, who they think may have had a bad knee, for a receiver that they don't have to pay, but he's got this concussion history. And if he takes a hit, I'm nervous for him. If he takes a hit and he's out, does he come back this season? Does he come back in 3 weeks? Who knows? It worries me with Cooks. So if you're drafting him, do so as a number three receiver. Here's an anecdote for you. I'm in a best ball draft right now where one of my game plans was to take Fuller and Cooks.
Yeah, I love that.
Figuring that between the two of them, one will be good most weeks. All right. And I'm sure I almost want to guarantee that there will be at least 3 weeks this year where neither of them will be available for Deshaun Watson. And I'm worried about what that will mean for Deshaun Watson. It might mean a lot of rushing yards. He might go off in that regard.
Yeah.
So I see where you're coming from on him having an amazing year. But I'm also worried about what's going to happen if there's too much on his shoulders. But I'm in this draft. I took Fuller first because I figured that he's the more popular best ball target. And I'm not even a Will Fuller fan. And I had two picks up at the end of a round, beginning of a round, and I figured, all right, I'm going to take the Cooks here to lock it up. And I didn't do it. I found other players that I liked better. I needed a quarterback, and there was a quarterback run, so I took a quarterback there. And Tyler Higbee's somebody I like a lot, so I took him too. And now I'm hoping that a miracle happens and Brandon Cooks makes it back to me one more time. It's probably not going to happen. But I know that he was good for those 4 years, even though they were done inconsistently. I can't really trust him to come in and be 65% of what DeAndre Hopkins was. And the Texans seem to be banking on him and Will Fuller. I think that's dangerous, knowing what their histories are. But the draft value has that baked in. As a wide receiver 3 in round 7 plus, I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong on Brandon Cooks, because there is room for him to deliver better than that if he can stay on the field for 13-plus games.
Yeah, I've said this multiple times on here, but if you're drafting with me and we reach round 8 and in that round I don't draft Marvin Jones or Brandon Cooks, my computer is broken. That's probably how it goes.
There's one last thing on Cooks, and then we can move to T.Y., I don't like the schedule for Houston at all to begin the year. They're at Kansas City. That's the very first game of the year. Could be a high-scoring game, but I think the pass rush is going to come after Deshaun quite a bit. And then they've got Baltimore and Pittsburgh in back-to-back games. Tough. And then they've got Minnesota. And you're right, the Vikings defense isn't going to be what it used to be. But it's still going to be a little bit of a challenge. They could go into that game against Minnesota 0-3. Could be rough. Maybe that means that they throw more, or maybe that means they change it up and they try and run more at that point. Who knows how the first three games will go, but I do think it'll be a difficult start for the year for Houston.
T.Y. Hilton, and then we'll close it out with tight ends. There's not a lot of tight ends. I think there's one guy that you either think he will or he won't, but maybe you have somebody else in mind. But I think T.Y. Hilton has now reached the, prior to his injury, not T.Y.'s, but I compare him to kind of A.J. Green a lot, how, like, he's been so good for so long, and we're just kind of bored of it. And he's had some injuries the last couple of years, which will happen to these receivers that keep getting older. But I think the Philip Rivers – now, Philip Rivers was not fantastic last year, but T.Y. Hilton was not used downfield last year. He had the lowest yards per reception of his career, and his average at the target, I think, was the lowest of his career as well. Jacoby Brissett took no shots down the field. Rivers is going to be more aggressive. And Hilton was also involved in the red zone a lot more. You take away Eric Ebron, who, you know, when he was on the field last year, is always a guy that's primarily used in the red zone. Hilton's not a guy that I'm, like, jumping at to take. He's not, you know, at this point, he's not that exciting. But with Philip Rivers there, I think they're going to use him more down the field than they did last year, which, you know, was the outlier year, it looks like. And, you know, his ADP, he's definitely going outside the top 20 of receivers. I don't think he's going to be I think his ceiling is like 15, but
yep.
He could easily, like, I could definitely see him bouncing back here, especially if, you know, I think their identity at some point, maybe right away, is going to be Jonathan Taylor, just giving him the ball 20 times. But, you know, if they ease him in, T.Y. Hilton is still, in my opinion, the focal point of this passing attack. And, you know, when healthy, he's still really good. Like, he had some really good weeks last year before he went down.
I know for a fact the Colts offensive brain trust loves the versatility that they've got on offense now.
They can move guys around a lot.
They can move guys around. They've got three different solutions at running back. They've got Hilton can line up anywhere. Pittman and Jack Doyle give them size. Campbell and Hilton give them speed. That's assuming that T.Y. still got the speed that we're used to seeing from him. I know that six of the last 7 years, Philip Rivers has funneled at least 100 targets to his top wide receiver, Keenan Allen. And they're not quite the same guy. But is Hilton in a position to pick up 100 targets from Philip Rivers? I think the simple fact that we're asking that question is not a good thing for T.Y. Hilton's value. Because it used to be, oh, for sure, T.Y. Hilton, he's the man. But he's had these lower leg injuries. He started training camp away from the team because he had a hamstring, I think it was, Adam. I'm nervous.
Yeah, that made me a little nervous when I saw that.
Yeah, and the calf injury last year, it was a torn calf. It was bad. I can't say that I'm confident in him hitting 120 targets. He's never been a high touchdown guy. I think when you're drafting him as a low-end number two wide receiver, I think that's fair, but I think there's room for him to finish worse than that. Whereas the best he can do, you said top 15, I think that's his ceiling.
Yeah.
So if you're drafting him as a low-end wide receiver two, I think that's fine. If it's higher than that, if it's the 20th receiver off the board, I think you're drafting him off of his name recognition, and it's not because of what he can do. Just like Pittsburgh, where they've got all these guys that can take touchdowns away from Juju, The Colts have guys that can take touchdowns away from T.Y. They've got three running backs who can do it. Jonathan Taylor could absolutely take a bunch away. And Pittman is their new Ebron. He's going to be that size, speed guy that they're going to try and manufacture matchups with. And he's absolutely going to have a bunch of splash plays this year. Pittman, you're going to draft Hilton ahead of Pittman, but maybe you draft both of them. And sure. Then you hope that if T.Y. goes down, well, you've got Pittman, and there's a big opportunity that opens up for him. And don't forget about Paris Campbell.
Yeah.
I could see him being a five-catch-per-game guy. He could probably be a good PPR sleeper because he's very fast. He's a very good route runner. He just had buzzard's luck with the rookie year, just kept getting banged up and never really got going. But he's got a lot of talent, and the coaching staff can't stop talking about him.
Let's close it out with tight end, the guy I was alluding to. I feel like the only guy, I don't want to say the only guy, but you look at the position, I mean, Kelce, Kittle, Ertz, Andrews, those guys aren't bouncing back from anything. Waller was great last year. Shout out to you. You were the first guy I saw in Darren Waller. But Evan Ingram, I mean, the talent is absolutely there. One of the most explosive tight ends in the NFL. Another guy who you want to talk about struggling to stay healthy, but my goodness, if he can stay healthy, like, would you be shocked if Evan Ingram led this team in targets? There's a lot of guys there. He wouldn't lead it with a massive number, but man, if he can get to 100 targets with his after the catch ability, like, and if Daniel Jones continues to improve, I think Evan Ingram, I don't like taking tight ends in that range. If I'm going to take one, I'm going to take Kelce or Kittle in rounds 2 or 3, or maybe Andrews in 4. If not, I'm just going to wait and get guys like Hayden Hurst or Gesicki or whoever, but there is upside with Evan Ingram in that, you know, tight end 6-7 range.
There is, but I think there's a lot to look out for, and you can start with the injuries. And since the start of 2017, we can say all day he's injury prone, but when you hear the list, it's going to make you make a face like you just bit into a grapefruit. 2 concussions, an MCL, a hamstring, and significant foot surgery. And he's not all the way back. You know, he's on the field and he's running around now and he's not on any PUP list, but I know that he's not all the way back. They're comfortable with where he's at, but who knows if he'll be really ever at 100% this year. And on top of that, consistency has been an issue for him in non-PPR leagues. Since he's came into the league, or the last 2 years, 2018, 2019, maybe that is as long as he's been in the league. I don't have it off the top of my head. 9 of 19 games. With 7-plus in non-PPR, 12 of 19 with 10-plus in PPR. So he's better for the PPR format than non-PPR. And we did see Jason Garrett when he called plays in Dallas. He had a bunch of years there. And then he had the play calling taken away in 2012. Jason Witten got a lot of work. Jason Witten did well. He had a lot of targets, and that would seem to favor Evan Ingram. But Garrett's always been more of a downfield play caller anyway. I think it favors Darius Slayton more than anybody else in that offense. Slayton's somebody I'm real excited about him. I believe that Evan Ingram is probably worth a round 8 pick, but I wouldn't feel good taking him before then. And if I took Evan Ingram, I'd want to take one of those young hotshot tight ends late and carry 2 of them, because I just can't commit to Evan Ingram staying on the field for even 13 games.
Yeah, and that's we did our tight end podcast a couple weeks ago with Justin Boone, and I knew the tight end position was deep this year, but there was names that just the confidence that a lot of us actually have in these tight ends as starters, like the position's loaded. You can, if you want to take the shot on Evan Ingram, and you do worry about him getting hurt. I mean, like you said, you can just, you know, later on in the late rounds take somebody like Austin Hooper, who should give you some sort of safety, and he's really falling in drafts. Or, you know, you go for the upside of like a Mike Gesicki, Jonnu Smith, Blake Jarwin. There's plenty of guys. So position, I think the tight end position is the most interesting in fantasy this year, in my opinion. I love it. It's really, really. And we've talked about guys like Irv Smith, who could really break out this year, Blake Jarwin, a lot of guys. So I love it. Anybody else, before we let you get out of here, Dave, we appreciate the time. We know August is a very busy time of year for everybody in the fantasy industry, but especially you guys at CBS. And what do you guys have going on at CBS for the listeners to check out?
We just released our free downloadable draft guide. So this isn't a magazine, but it is something that you can download off the internet, print out, and take with you. Maybe it's a you're listening and you need a you're in a crunch to get ready for your draft. This will help you prepare. We've got bios on every major player, along with these cool little, I don't know if they're emojis or icons, whatever you want to call them, that let you know if this guy is on thin ice or if he's a PPR stud or you know, who knows what it could be. We have a lot of those in there, a lot of great strategy tips that are in there, and it's free. And it's you can find it on CBSSports.com. And that's on top of everything else that we have that's free. Our podcast, Fantasy Football Today, our live video stream show every day during the football season, Fantasy Football Today, typically at noon Eastern. And we've started a Twitch channel. So you can actually send us questions live on a video chat. I did one yesterday. It was ridiculous. I was sitting in my front yard answering fantasy questions, answering life questions. It was a little surreal to answer questions that didn't have to do with fantasy, but it was fun. And we're just we're trying to just do more and more to be available for people who play fantasy football and who want, you know, a little vote of confidence or have a serious question about their lineups. And this time of year, want to find the sleepers to dominate with late on draft day. That's always been my specialty. And that we've got it for you. It's really easy to find it. You just go on Google, type in CBS Sports Fantasy. Everything will come up. And you'll be able to find whatever it is you're looking for to help you win your league.
Love it. Also, I think we have our IDP drafts coming up, and
I
have just been absolutely dreadful in that league the 2 years I've been in it, so I need to get something going this year for sure. But Dave, appreciate you as always coming on. Make sure you're following Dave at Dave Richard on Twitter, and follow everybody from the CBS Sports team. They've always been my go-to. They are, I told you guys this before, you know, one of the main reasons I got into this, and always a treat to talk to you guys.
Adam, great talking to you. Good luck in all your leagues this year, except for the IDP league. I hope you finish in second in that.
At this point, I'll take it. I really will. Best of luck, everybody, this year. We'll talk to you guys next week. Derek will be back on the FTN Fade the Chalk podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at APPfeiffer24, and at ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.